Good morning, everybody. I'm so delighted to be here with you. It's been about a month since I've been here, and I'm just really happy to see your faces and be together today. So if you can turn your video on for a few minutes, maybe even less, just so we can see you. That's such a beautiful way for us to begin to look at each other. You know, just to be able to see each other's faces is it's uplifting, right? It's just uplifting. And I always keep my video on gallery view because I feel like I'm in the room with everybody all at once. So just greeting each other, however you do, just with a smile, seeing each other here. I am joining you today from Washington, D.C., where I am here taking care of my sister, who's fine. She's getting over some surgery. And so I've been in caretaker big sister mode. It's what I'm doing. And so I am definitely in a different space. And I have been so messed up about the time zones. I can't tell you how many times I checked to make sure that I got here at the right time today. Is it 3 hours ahead? Is it 3 hours behind? Well, I mean, I knew, but it is a little bit disorienting to figure out these time zones with everything. So here we are, and I'm very, very happy to be here. And this little town that I'm in, Tacoma Park, Maryland, just outside of DC, I'm a little embarrassed to say that I actually don't know who the indigenous community is of this land here. And I didn't have a chance to look it up, but I realized that I do really like making that acknowledgement that we're just part of a long lineage. And well, there have been other people here way before many of us. So I just want to honor that. I just want to honor that. So as we go through our morning, what we'll do is we'll start shortly with an arriving meditation as usual, and then I will offer some Dharma thoughts. We'll have a little longer meditation and always time to talk with each other. So that's about the size of it. So let's move into a meditation. Finding a posture that works really well in your body. You're welcome to close your eyes or not. But whether or not your eyes are closed or open, getting a sense of some visual perception. If your eyes are open, having a gentle, soft gaze downward. If your eyes are closed, you still might have a visual imprint, whether it's shadow and light or movement. Just noticing. It may be sounds that you're noticing around you. The sense of touch. Noticing the places the body is connected to the floor or the furniture, connected to itself. The eyes or the lips, the hands. Noticing touch points, contact points. Becoming aware of the breathing. Perhaps on the next inhale, letting the shoulders rise towards the ears. And on the exhale, letting the shoulders gently drop, sending some relaxing energy down through the body. Breathing and knowing you're breathing. And as we come into this time together, our 2 hour retreat, approaching it with a quality of friendliness. You're here because you want to be here. like coming to see a good friend, meeting the Dharma again with each other. And through the breath and the body, getting a sense of being here. Here with the mind, heart, here with the body, here with the spirit. And cultivating a sense of listening, listening in. You certainly might be aware of sounds around you, but in this meditation, turning the awareness inward and listening in. Placing a little awareness in the heart center. Returning over and over again to the warmth of your own heart. The goodness of your own heart. Moment by moment, breath by breath, trusting this next moment, trusting being here. And then offering yourself some gratitude and appreciation for showing up. Quality of maybe an internal bow that says, oh, yes, I'm here with Sangha. And in this being here, there's a quality of clearing a space for this time of practice. Clearing a space in the mind heart, a space for the body to relax, to be just as it is. Sitting quietly for a few minutes. This is a poem by William Stafford called The Way It Is. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die. And you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. Sensing the threads of the breath and the body, the mind and the heart, And as you hear the sound of the bell, trusting that, trusting all these parts that hold us together, and then coming back at the end of the bell. Okay, welcome back. I am glad that we're all here. I chose that poem for our arriving meditation today because as I've been thinking about our time together and what I would like to offer and talk about today, the title, The Way It Is, always strikes me because I think that's the definition of the Dharma. It's the way things are, the way it is. And our practice over and over again is meeting our lives the way they are, the way things are. And with all of the tumult and pain that is in our world, I find such tenderness and such refuge in coming back and just being here with what is in my mind, my heart, my body. The practice over and over again of how is it now? Can I be right here? So I think that the poem is a beautiful description of the refuges, the truth of suffering, of dukkha, the truth of change, aging, illness, death, loss. And the imperative, actually, truly the necessity to keep going with this commitment to awakening. Why is it that we all keep coming back over and over again? And probably many reasons. There's something that's happening for each one of us that keeps us here and here and here. And we can keep experiencing different ways of being here, whether it's through the mind, through the heart, through some body experience. Oh, right, the way it is, this is how it is now. And it brings us into that very basic bodhisattva vow, the bodhisattva, the one who chooses to show up and help others. That the world is suffering and it's our task to meet it. It's not our task to necessarily, well, for sure, it's not our task to singularly try to fix it, but it is our job to meet what is happening in our lives, in the world. And we need this practice of sitting still, of being still, to fortify ourselves to be able to meet our lives. You know, the Buddha said a couple of things about what is the task of the bodhisattva. And one of them is that the bodhisattva should cultivate the aspiration for awakening forever, for as long as we live. So what is it that helps us cultivate an aspiration? So an aspiration is a direction we want to go. And I think that all of us have that, whether or not we have articulated it that way or not. Doesn't really matter. But the fact of showing up over and over again for however many years it might be, or maybe it's brand new, the fact that we're here is a commitment to deeper and deeper understanding of our lives and each other's lives that lead to more and more wisdom, more and more compassion. And the Buddha is famous for the story goes that shortly before he passed on, one of his penultimate instructions to those around him was strive on with diligence. Strive on with diligence, which has, to my knowledge, also been translated as move into the future with confidence. And you know, that could feel difficult in a troubled world that we have. To move into the future with confidence could feel way too big to do that, but maybe not too big to bring it down really small. Take the next breath, the next step. And we've talked in here last month when I was here, if it wasn't last month, it was sometime recently, that I talked about the three tenets of the Zen Peacemakers movement, the work of a Zen peacemaker, which is to show up with don't know mind, just show up not knowing, bear witness to whatever is happening, and then take the next caring action. And I'm finding that these tenets are weaving their way into my practice completely. And I find them to be like this three-legged stool. And on top of those tenets is the awareness, is the mindfulness of my life. So to move into the future with confidence says, yeah, can I just show up to the next moment? And sometimes it is the very next moment. And that helps me take the next step and not move into the overwhelm of, oh my God, it's way too big. I can't do all of this. So in this poem, he talks about there's a thread you follow. And I think these are these refuges, these reliable teachings. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. So maybe this thread, we could relate to it as the thread is the aspiration to awaken. Maybe that doesn't change, or maybe sometimes we lose our faith, but we come back to it because, as it's said many times, that the Dharma is good in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end, that this is a refuge in and of itself. We can always come back. It's always here. So in that way, the things that the Buddha taught as true, they don't change. These are reliable teachings. The truth of suffering is true. The truth of impermanence is true. The truth of interconnection, the ways in which greed and ill will and delusion bring about suffering, and how they're opposites of generosity and kindness, compassion, and clear seeing bring about happiness and well-being. Those things don't change, I don't think. And so this thread we follow, even though there's this thread of all these things that don't change, but our circumstances change, we can come back over and over again. And probably, I hope, every time that you have heard the instruction, literally in a meditation, come back, begin again, is because that is this refuge where we can go and say, oh, right, and the next line says, people wonder about what you're doing. Actually, I'm going to pause here a second. Carlita, could you put this up on the screen? Because I really want to talk about why I think this poem is important. Okay, so just take a look at this. So I said the first two lines, there's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. Has that ever happened to you? Or somebody might say, why are you doing this? What is it about this meditation? What is happening for you? Or if you've ever felt, and this is actually a very important point, that as your own Dharma practice has evolved and grown and supported you, are there those around you who you love who aren't involved in the practice? And it might be hard to talk about what you're up to. You might be a mystery to others. And this is the Buddha has pointed to this when he talked about, I'm sure you know the story of the teaching of the two arrows, the difference between a practitioner and a non-practitioner. A practitioner understands that getting shot with an arrow is akin to experiencing all the permutations of suffering that we receive. But the practitioner doesn't make things worse. So when somebody says something unkind to us, we really have the discipline to not shoot the arrow back and cause the pain to that person. But the teaching goes that the non-practitioner doesn't have that training and so might react by causing more pain. And so this line, I think, is important. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. And it can be hard to explain about this thread of the Dharma and the refuges, but it does help people to understand what we're up to. And it's hard for others to see. But as far as this thread goes, these refuges, the Dharma, while you hold it, you can't get lost. If you've ever had the experience of being a little bit in disarray or maybe in an agitated state, and you have the presence of mind and heart to come back to your practice, whether it's the formal sitting practice or something you've learned that really holds you in place in a gentle, soft, wise way, skillful way, it helps. That's how the refuges become alive. It's inherent in the way of practice. And yet, here we go. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and you get old. Well, you've certainly heard that before, right? These are the five daily reflections. Tragedies happen. The first noble truth, difficulty happens. But in the five daily reflections, we all experience loss, the pain of that. People do get hurt or die, and we suffer and we get old. Aging, illness, wellness, all of it, it's right here. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. But we don't stop. You don't ever let go of the thread. Thank you, Carlita. Because it is true, the truth of impermanence is so utterly true. We can't stop it, but we keep going anyway. We just keep doing this anyway, even though we know we will age, we will go through cycles of pain and loss, we'll lose those we love, they will lose us. That doesn't mean that we don't hold this practice and practice this practice dearly, because it's a way of life. There's a way in which it's the refuge of it is so beautiful and nourishing and reliable. So where I'm going with this today is I want to talk about this ability to keep coming back, to stay, to be here. So Carlita, if you can put the cartoon up now, let's see if it works. All right, check it out. Two dogs, they took their collars off. There's the incense burning, the candles in the back. The key to meditation is learning to stay. Isn't that just great? The key to meditation is learning to stay. Thanks, Carlita. And I think it is, right? How many times have you sat in meditation and thought, oh, I've got 1,500 other things to do, I'm getting up? I mean, I think we've probably all done that. The list starts, and okay, I've been sitting 5 minutes, that's enough, I'm going to go. It's not just the key to meditation is learning to stay. And you can define stay however you want. And in no way am I condoning staying in a place that's dangerous for you. So just know that the context of what I'm saying has to do with being able to meet our lives with a quality of no matter whatness and learning to stay. What can I learn? What am I feeling? What am I seeing? What am I hearing? Can I meet my life as it is, or do I have to run? So we learn to be right here. Munindraji, who was one of Jack Kornfield's teachers, said, if you want to understand your mind, sit down and observe it. If you want to understand your heart, sit down and feel it. Be willing to meet those hard moments. And I think that this is one of the things that Sangha has really taught me is that when I come to Sangha, whether it's in this role of the one who is speaking or as a student, no matter what, I'm always a student, whatever role I occupy. But I have learned over and over again that the nourishment that I receive, the refuge of the Sangha, gives me the courage and the steadiness to be able to stay, to be able to stay with whatever is happening, especially in the discomfort. The Zen teacher, Bonnie Miyotai Therese, she says, commitment to any practice means not moving to something easier. When it gets difficult, the challenge is to stay. And it is a tendency, I think, for us to move to something easier, right? Oh, it's too hard. I don't want to do this. I know we all know what that's like. But the key to our practice is learning to stay. It is there in those moments of wanting to bolt, to go, to say, forget it, I'm not doing this. What is it? Is it a sense of insufficiency? Not good enough? The sense of doubt, the way doubts arise. Can we learn to dwell and to actually dwell? If you wanted to take apart that word, there's a difference between, I think, the felt sense of dwelling and the felt sense of staying. Do you feel a difference in that? The difference between dwell and stay? To me, dwelling has a little more space around it. Stay has a little bit more like I'm telling my dog to stay. It's a little bit more directive. Maybe there's the opportunity for a little more peace just in thinking of dwelling, a dwelling space. It's been said that the secret to our happiness and equanimity is a wholehearted, unrestricted cooperation with the unavoidable. That's really a great way to think about it. A wholehearted, unrestricted cooperation with the unavoidable. So we know what's unavoidable is our aging, our cycles of illness and wellness, the unavoidable nature of loss and death. So the pith instruction is over and over again, stay. Making a space big enough so we can stay and be here. And when we make that choice to stay, it's not about being with what's unavoidable, because we're not avoiding anything. We are just being here with exactly what's here. I remember one time hearing Sylvia say something like, don't duck, no ducking. And sometimes I think I want to duck. No, wait a minute, I don't want to be in the way of that. But I know that she doesn't, what she meant was don't put yourself in harm's way, get out of harm's way, but be willing to stay. Be willing to be here in it. So learning to stay with ourselves in meditation is like training a dog. And here's what Pema Chodron says. She said, restlessness, stay. Discursive mind, stay. Our fear and loathing out of control, stay. Aching knees and throbbing back, stay. What's for lunch? Stay. What am I doing here? Stay. I can't stand this another minute. Stay. And this is how we cultivate the steadfastness, openness, kindness, strength, and courage. So when we wander off, we gently encourage ourselves to come back and stay and settle down. And then Pema goes on to say, the real work of the peacemaker, and let's think of the peacemaker as the practitioner, because we're making peace with ourselves all the time, this practice of befriending, the work of the bodhisattva, is to find the soft spot in the tenderness, in that very uneasy place, and stay with it. If we can stay with the soft spot and stay with the tender heart, then we're cultivating the seeds of peace. And this is why we need to do this practice of staying. Because when we can find those soft places in us, those tender, kind, open places in us, we start to see them in one another. And then we are sowing the seeds of peace. And we know that that's what's necessary. And not only for ourselves, but way beyond. So I appreciate Pema's talking about the soft spot, the tenderness in that very uneasy place. Because I want to talk a little bit about the first foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath, and how this relates to that. The Buddha famously said, there is a body in this first foundation. There is a body. You know, in our culture, so many of us live from here up. We get so disconnected from what is happening in the body and the wisdom of the body. And we understand what that means, you know, when we might have a decision to make and there's a feeling in the body, the gut knowing that says, oh, yeah, this feels right. That's coming from the body, from this gut. And the feeling of, oh no, I'm not going to do that. When we are in tune with what the body says, we can trust this body awareness. And I like to think that that's what the Buddha was talking about. Beyond the senses, beyond seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching, this is a deeper knowing where the wisdom lies in the body. So when Munindraji said, sit and know you're sitting and the whole of the Dharma will be revealed, he also said, if you want to understand your mind, sit down and observe it. But if you sit and know you're sitting, and certainly this is metaphorical, but it can be literal. When you know what you are doing, the way it is shows itself. And we'll talk more about that. The Buddha said, within this fathom-long body is found all of the teachings. Well, we certainly know what pain in the body, discomfort in the body is like, the dukkha in the body. And we also know what well-being feels like in the body. So right now, if you don't have a headache, notice, no headache. If you don't have a toothache, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, notice no toothache. If your temperature is just right, notice that quality of just right. And then if there is discomfort in the body, you know that. You can tell. So we have that sense of the presence or absence of dukkha. Or if when we started our time together today, you were a little bit cool, but now you're not. There's the presence of change, or was if something was uncomfortable and now it's not. What has changed in the 40 minutes that we've been together? Something certainly has. Maybe just the quality of the light coming through, or maybe there's a neighbor with a barking dog that's not barking anymore. But if you sit and know you're sitting, training to stay, it doesn't take very long to see the truth of the way it is of dukkha and non-dukkha, of how impermanence is working, yet you're still here. This is the thread that doesn't change. You're still here in more or less attention, attentively. And you can certainly feel the truth of interconnection. You know, the breath is coming, the breath is going out, everything is connected in the body. Or you might have all at the same time, the sense of how these three toxins work, the three poisons work, the greed, the ill will, the confusion, just by sitting still in this body. I don't want to do this. Oh, I want to sit here for the next 2 hours. All I want to do is more meditation because I get so blissy. I'm just going to do this. Forget all my other obligations. I just want more of this. Or the agitation of pushing it away. Or the confusion about why am I even in this practice? Am I doing it for states of bliss? Or am I doing it to learn more about the way it is so I can show up in my life with more and more wisdom, more skill? So we're always doing this. We're always in the beginning. It's always the first time. Because every single time we practice staying here in this tender, soft spot, it's new. Each moment truly is new. And we learn to rest in the middle of it. There's that beautiful Pali word, tatramajjatata, here in the middleness. And this is where we learn to stay, tatramajjatata, with balance, impartiality, equanimity, that beautiful definition of equanimity that says, let's see what happens next. Can we be still and wait and see? What is happening inside of us that starts to ferment a little bit? So we're here to discover together what it means to be here. And it's so much easier to do it together, isn't it? So much easier to do this together. So, what I want to do today in our meditation is take us through a fully guided practice of a body scan as a way to meet the moment with awareness of the body. Is body scan new to anybody? Just raise your hand if you haven't done this before. Okay, so you may know that just like in sitting meditation, following the breath, following a sign, a sense, a sound, perhaps, that when the mind goes off somewhere else and you know you come back, same thing with the body scan. If my voice just becomes noise and the mind goes somewhere else, when you notice, oh yeah, she's just talking in the background and I'm not paying attention at all, just come back and start exactly where I am offering this guidance. And then we'll talk about it. We'll talk about what was that like to meet the body as we do this scan through exactly as it is. And this is not easy work, this work of staying here and being here over and over again. I love this teaching from another Zen master, Kogen Chino Roshi, who said, the more you sense the rareness and value of your own life, the more you realize how you use it, how you manifest it, is all your responsibility. We face such a big task. So naturally, such a person sits down for a while. It's so true. We need to sit down for a while because the truth of our lives is often breathtaking. It's a big deal. So finding a posture that works well for you, take a moment to get there. If you'd like to close your eyes, close your eyes. If not, again, a gentle gaze downward. And for the next couple of breath cycles, get very close to the experience of the inhale, the experience of the exhale, arriving and settling and being here. Sensing the breath coming and going and the way the body responds, the motion the body makes in response to the breathing. There's a rise and fall of the chest and the shoulders as the lungs fill and empty. And the belly expands and settles back into place with the breath. You might notice the air going in and out of the nostrils. Just take a moment to fully arrive in the experience of breathing. And now bringing the awareness to the crown of the head, the very top of the head. Maybe imagining that soft spot, the soft spot that was there when you were born before the plates of the skull came together. And that soft spot is still there, energetically. Just noticing any sensation in the crown of the head. There may be a little pressure, maybe some pulsing, vibration, or tingling, or perhaps nothing at all. Simply the awareness that there is a top of the head. And becoming aware of the forehead and the eyebrows, the sides and the back of the head, that whole circle of where a hat would sit on the head. Becoming aware of the eyes, the gentle touch of the eyelids if they're closed. The eyeballs themselves, even the space behind the eyeballs. Remembering to breathe. Letting this breath bring some relaxing energy to the face, softening the cheeks and the nose. Even letting the jaw soften. If your mouth is closed, noticing the touch of the lips. The tongue resting in the mouth. You may be even sensing how the tongue goes down the throat to the root of the tongue. Breathing. Then becoming aware of the sides of the head, the area of the ears, even inside the ears, the space around the ears, and then moving to the back of the head, the occiput, the base of the skull. Becoming aware of the neck, the back of the neck, and the sides, the throat, under the chin area, breathing. If you like, even turn the head side to side or up and down, sensing from the inside out motion, maybe even drawing a circle with your nose to experience the full range of your own neck. And it can be very small, whatever you like, just becoming aware of the space of the neck and the throat, breathing. And now placing the awareness at the tops of the shoulders. And on your next exhale, imagine moving the awareness down the upper arms and into the elbows. From the elbows down the forearms, into the wrists, hands, and fingers. Letting yourself sense the whole arm structure from the tops of the shoulders to the tips of the fingers. Breathing and staying here for a few moments. And with an inhale, coming back to the tops of the shoulders. And as you exhale, letting the awareness float down the back, upper back, mid, into the lower back. And as you breathe, imagine sweeping, soothing the back with your awareness up and down the back. Inhaling up, exhaling down. Staying with this body scan, noticing what it's like to be this intimate with the body, connecting your awareness to the body. And imagine moving from the hips up to the armpits and down again as you breathe. And inhaling your awareness again to the tops of the shoulders. And as you exhale, moving down the front of the body, down the chest, the upper belly, the mid belly, and the low belly. Seeing how it is. Up and down the front of the body as you breathe. On your next inhale, once again, coming to the tops of the shoulders. And this time with the exhale, imagine going into the inside of the body, floating, directing your awareness gently down through the lungs and the heart, all the digestive organs of the stomach and the liver. Pancreas, spleen, the intestines, and the kidneys, all the ways these organs are connected, the heart, down into the pelvis, breathing. Noticing the tenderness of your awareness, the willing, kind openness to be with this body, breath by breath. And now becoming aware of the base of the body, moving to the outside again, right where the sit bones are meeting whatever you're sitting on, or perhaps you're reclining, but sensing the base of the body, the bottom, the groin, right where the femur comes into the hips, the whole pelvis, breathing. For the next couple of breaths, sensing from the base of the body to the top of the head, the chest, the belly, the arms and hands, breathing like this, being here. And then becoming aware of the thighs, especially right where the femur comes into the hips. Becoming aware of the length of the thigh bone, where it meets the knees, and the muscles that surround the bone of the thighs. Becoming aware of the fronts and the backs of the thighs, inner and outer. Landing in the knees and breathing. And then moving down the lower legs, the shins and the calves. Down into the ankles. And then noticing the feet. The tops of the feet and the toes, soles of the feet and the heels. The whole body, right here, breathing, being breathed. And now, if it works for you, leaving some awareness in the feet and also placing some awareness at the crown of the head, as if you have a north and south pole of the body. These places that hold you right here. And in between, the body breathes, the body is. There is a body. Breathing and being breathed, staying right here. We'll sit quietly for a bit with the steadiness of the body, the openness, this soft receptivity, the sati. That is cultivated when we sit still and we wait, waiting for nothing, just being. And we'll sit quietly for a little bit. Staying here, being with this body, inviting the heart and the heart mind also be right here, staying, inhabiting right now. This is a poem called Waiting by Tokopah Turner. There's a good kind of waiting which trusts the agents of fermentation. There's a waiting which knows that in pulling away, one can more wholly return. There's the waiting which prepares oneself, which anoints and adorns and makes oneself plump with readiness for love's return. There's a good kind of waiting which doesn't put oneself on hold, but rather adds layers to the grandness of one's being worthy. This sweet waiting for one's fruits to ripen doesn't stumble over itself to be the first to give, but waits for the giving to issue at its own graceful pace. This good kind of waiting, of staying, of being here, that trusts these agents of fermentation. What do we learn by staying, by being, by coming back over and over again, a sense of this thread that's reliable. We can do this, we can lead our lives. And now bringing some awareness to the heart space. We'll move into a little bit of compassion practice, some metta practice. Beginning with the practice of the heart's breath. Imagining as you breathe in, nourishing fresh breath coming in from every direction, nourishing all parts of your heart. And as you breathe out, letting go of whatever you want to let go of, but also sending your goodness out into the world, this heart's breath, the give and take. Knowing the threads that connect us all. If it's helpful for you to even place a hand on the chest, on the center of the chest, imagining connecting your body with itself, with the heart, do that. May we all accept ourselves just as we are right in this moment. Repeat that to yourself. You can either use I or we. May I accept myself just as I am right in this moment. May we surround our limitations, our challenges, the dukkha, with respect, with care and love. May we surround our limitations with respect, care, and love. May each of us be supported and support each other with steadiness, strength, and courage. May I be supported with strength, steadiness, and courage. May we rest in the beauty and in the goodness of our awakening hearts. Because when we do that, our bodhisattva selves show up. May I rest in the beauty and goodness of my awakening heart. So I'd love to know what you're thinking about, and not only from what I said before the meditation, but how did that go for you? What did you notice in the guided practice, in the ability to stay with it? What you might have noticed, was there agitation? Was there softness? Was there ease? Was there not? How are you doing? Tell me what you noticed.
During that body scan, even though I was still feeling, I was feeling the aching, but I wasn't. And it was, so that was very nice. So it's possible to feel the aching and not feel it.
Vivian, this is a really important point, and this is why I want to talk with everybody about what happens in body scan. Because it is sort of a remarkable capacity of mind that we can even place our awareness somewhere in the body. To just say, to notice the tip of the elbows. And we can actually, there's a sense of, oh, there's the tip of the elbow. So that's one thing, the miracle of awareness and what happens. But there is a way in which, when we bring attention to any area, that even if it has been problematic, when we bring kind, caring energy to any area, it tends to feel a little better. The sting, and I don't mean that literally, it could be the sting, the ache, but the uncomfortable sensation has more space. And so there's a breathing that happens when we bring this soft, kind energy into the body through the mechanism of a scan. Because part of the instruction, you may have noticed that periodically I reminded everybody to breathe. And that's important because otherwise we can forget about the breathing and we're focused too hard on whatever area of the body I was naming. But by bringing this caring, soothing breath energy into that space of the body, there's a way in which we can stay. There's a softening and there's an opening. So I'm glad that happened, and I appreciate you pointing that out, Vivian. I think that's an important piece, a really important piece. Gwen, and then Cindy.
Eons ago, I do retreats with Stephen Levine, and that was my introduction to sweeping the body meditation. I don't even know how long, a very long period of time, secondary to old abuse issues, I couldn't get through the whole body. I'd get somewhere around the waist, and I was just disassociated again. And it really, I don't know how long it's been now since I've done that. And today it just created a celebration again to remember how it used to be, and that I can do that entire scan, and the joy of feeling every organ, and to be able to sink so deeply into being present with the body. I don't even know if there's language that says for all of us how healing it is to be able to be present for ourselves that way. So I really appreciate this today.
I have goosebumps. This is the thing about, I don't want to sound, I'm just going to say it. I think this practice can save our lives in this kind of way. That the joy that you can feel to have the perspective of many years ago of the things that happen in our lives that take us away from being able to feel the body, the way traumas do that. That is what they do. And bit by bit by bit, this practice says, you can know, you can be here, you can welcome yourself. And we don't push it and we don't force it. It's just breath by breath. And I think that there's some a way in which this thing, it doesn't happen on its own, but there's a mystery to it. It happens when we keep coming back. This thing about stay. You belong. There is a body. This is worthy. We can wait. Just going to be here and wait. I'm very happy for you and thank you for pointing that out, saying that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Cindy.
Getting older, things change so dramatically, and that my
What is
husband
it?
and I have been laughing a lot about aches and stuff that we never had when we were younger. And we're both athletic, and we both have. It's made me, though, appreciate how well my body has done for so long. And how it supported me. So I have a lot of leg and knee issues right now. I've been doing a lot of body scans, and it totally helps. It
Oh,
really
good.
helps. Yeah, big time.
Barbara.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I found the body scan delicious and nutritious. And really, I've been practicing some form of that for decades, but I feel that it is evolving without even, you know, I'm coming to it differently. And I've noticed I started when I wake up in the morning, I start to send metta into my own body.
Oh, I'm so glad you're doing that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I heard Sharon Salzberg say, I listened to some kind of a talk and she talked about it for a minute and I went, oh yeah. And it's like, it's jumped into my consciousness.
That's so right.
Yeah.
Isn't it something about how she talked about it for a minute, but it went in?
Yeah.
You know, we never really know when somebody's going to say something that lands at the right moment in the right way. And it gets some sort of legs and roots in us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're doing that. And you're right. The practices evolve. And to make it your own is really important. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning, Heidi. It's always lovely to see you, even if it's on Zoom. I remember the days when we got to see you in person.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, maybe it'll come back. So this is an experience in body scan, but it wasn't from this morning. There was a period of my life before my back surgery where I experienced really severe pain. Walking, standing, just about doing anything. And yet I signed up to take a 10-week intensive with Temple Smith on refuge in the body. And I'm saying to myself, this is nuts. The body in my mind is a place of pain. And in a one-on-one session with Christina, Temple's partner, I explained my preconception that the body was not a place of refuge, that the body was a place of pain. And so she took me through a guided meditation. She and Temple are both somatic practitioners, so she's very into the body. And she took me through a body scan. And what she asked me to do was not to focus on the places in my body that were painful, but she said, find a place in your body where you are not experiencing pain. And of course, you know, this is a fathom long body. It is not all pain. You know, the pain is largely up here, actually, and only in very specific parts of the body. And this was the most beautiful meditation because actually, the place I found in my body where I wasn't feeling pain was the heart center. And so we spent that body scan focusing on the sensations that came from the heart center. And it was blissful. It was blissful. And so I try to remind myself because, you know, I'm 76 years old. This body is doing what old bodies do. You know, I can tell you exactly where in my body right now I'm feeling pain, but I know that there are also places where there is not pain, and I do not have to spend my attention in focusing on the places where it's painful.
That is the brilliance of this practice, is around choice, because the painful places typically have the loudest voice, right? They really want to hijack the attention. And so by doing that practice, which is a very specific, I know the practice you're talking about, it's sometimes it's called the pendulation practice, where you start where there isn't pain, and then you can move to the places that might be a little bit painful, and then you come back to where it's safe and comfortable and okay. It shifts the, if you think about the neural pathways that get attention from the loudest voice, the thing that might be perceiving danger or pain, but we actually shift it intentionally, that choice of what you said, I didn't have to pay attention to that. I didn't have to go there. It's such a powerful piece of what we're doing here. I really appreciate you pointing this out, that you can, it can be your heart.
It also interrupted my mental pattern of associating the body with pain. I don't have to make that association.
That's right. Such an important piece. Such an important piece. And in fact, I'm so glad that you brought this up. I do work with people who are in, to me, unimaginable amounts of chronic pain. People whose bodies are incredibly challenging. And we do that practice specifically. And they'll say, I don't know how this is working, but right now it doesn't hurt. And, you know, we don't have to know how everything is working, but we can let it work. Mm-hmm. There's a way in which can we just open up to that. This is helpful. Yeah, thanks. It's nice to see you.
Thank you.
Jean.
Since you kept asking about how this today's practice was, I wanted to say that it was very different than any other guided meditation I've done. I love them all, but you had an interesting way of, yes, bringing in the breathing, but like one part of the body and then the other, and then come up and now go down. So we were like scanning and focusing. I mean, you did it with lots of parts, but I had never focused on from my under my arm. You know what I mean? It really brought awareness to different places. And that was really unique and different. It was like, bring the energy here, now take it down and bring it up. Bring it, you know, it was very rhythmical and different. Just really
it is different.
I really
it
like is, it.
And it is like, I don't think we often think about that line from the hip to the armpit and down. Like, it's not typically in someone in our awareness, but it's there. And so the point of that meditation was to include all these different aspects of the body that are often completely not in our awareness.
Yeah.
And so by doing that, like this teaching from the Buddha, there is a body, this whole body. Let's not reject any part of the body. And it's not that that was a place of rejection. It was just not a place of awareness. But now it is. Now it is.
Yeah.
And so all these parts of us matter and belong.
Yes, I really liked the movement. I mean, there was from the feet to the crown. That's very common. There's with certain ones, the spine. But just in general, having that flow, it works for my brain.
I'm so glad.
To think it, because it is hard for me to stay still. And so that is like, wow, I can stay with movement, with the flow. With it.
So here's the thing that's true. So that might feel like a paradox. I can stay with movement. Because when we talk about staying and waiting and trusting a process, it doesn't mean that we are stiff.
Yes.
And that we can't breathe. It means here is this alive body. There are so many things that are happening in the body right now. You know, there are all the systems that happen that are involuntary systems, breathing, circulation, respiration. I just said that, respiration, circulation, digestion, the nervous system, the thoughts, all of it
is moving.
It's all alive and moving. But when we come into some stillness and give that some space, that we actually can start understanding all of the interconnected systems that are right here in this miraculous body. To me, what that's done over time is it has really turned down the volume of any sort of self-rejection around body, because this body is pretty amazing what it does. And if I can be in awe of this body, how can I be critical of, you know, we all have ways that we can criticize our bodies and how we look or don't look. And that becomes such minutia, so unimportant when we put that side by side with the miraculous nature of what these bodies do. Okay, Cheryl.
Very good to see you. Thank you so much. I really appreciated that you focused on the jaw and the throat and the tongue. I've had temporal mandibular problems since my 20s. And now there's like a tongue muscle that causes pain. And while you were doing that, number one, I really focused on relaxing those areas because that's where I think I hold tension. I also didn't feel the pain.
Isn't it amazing? It's
just amazing. It wasn't until after the body scan that it was like, oh yeah, that usually causes pain. So anyway, I really enjoyed it, and it is truly great to see you again.
Thank you. So this is just one of these amazing things about the power of awareness, that there's a line that I think comes out of Tibetan practice that says, all hindrances are self-liberating in the great space of awareness, which means when we bring awareness to whatever is happening, the constriction, the problems tend to dissolve for that time. It doesn't mean that it won't come back, but it does mean that we can train the awareness. We have the choice of what we pay attention to. And now the experience of this body scan, that anybody who found some ease out of it, you can remember, oh, I can do this body scan. And you can go back to the recording of this also, because it will be on the recordings. And so you can listen to the guided practice. So we can forget about the value of body scan, but I wanted to do this today, because the value of being with this alive body, training us to stay.
The thing that's so interesting is that's really, at least for me, counterintuitive, because if I have pain, I don't want to concentrate on
it. Well, exactly. Well, that's the thing about Vedana, right? Something's uncomfortable, I'm going to push it away. Something's comfortable, I want more of it. But again, this training is, this is what's happening. Can I bring some love to this right here? That's what we were doing, everybody. That's what we were doing today. And of course, I didn't even get to the Dharma talk after the meditation, but it doesn't matter, because I will be here for a couple of weeks in January. So the only thing that I want to say is I am offering a 3-night retreat in outside of Boonville, a couple of hours north of San Francisco, January 4th through 7th. And there are a couple spots left. It's going to be a very small women's retreat. If you would like to start the new year with a small group of women, it's on my website. You can check it out. So I want to end our time together again by reading this poem to you, The Way It Is by William Stafford. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the threat. We offer up the goodness of everything we do for all those who are suffering. May all beings, human and non, have enough to eat, be cared for deeply, their worth be seen, be loved, be part of a welcoming community, so all of this suffering can be healed. Thank you, everybody. See you next month. Happy New Year. Happy holidays of all kinds. Be safe. See you again. Thank you for being here today, everybody. It's an honor.